sexuality.
Hello, and welcome to Secular Sexuality, the ACA show reminding you the most important thing is to remember the most important thing. Tonight, I'm joined again by mindfulness-based therapist, Callie Lawrence. Welcome, Callie.
Hello, glad to be back.
Yeah, super excited to jump into all of this with you. Tonight, we are bringing our hearts and our minds gently into the present. So if you are somebody who has just never gotten mindfulness, or maybe if you've seen firsthand how mindfulness can impact sex life, love life, give us a call. We would love your stories and questions. We're at 512-991-9242 or at tiny.cc/callsex because the show is coming right now. Cool. Well, let's do it. You were catching me up a little bit on everything that's been going on with you the last couple of months, but tell us what's got you turned on right now.
Oh, so lately I've been creating a playlist of all the like throwback high school rap songs, like raunchy ones.
Yeah.
You know, perfect. Like some juvenile.
So we're talking like 90s R&B hip hop kind of stuff?
Early 2000s.
Not trying to date anything too close.
Yeah. Too Short, I think he just tops the list as favorite. Did you ever listen to Too Short?
Oh, no. I was very uncool and shocking to everybody. It's only been honestly in the last couple of years that I've gotten even the most basic primer of rap.
Oh, yeah. No, he's so good. If anyone has a takeaway from the show, it's go listen to Too Short. That's the most important thing that people need to know. So Cocktails, beautiful song about all the ways that he gets head. So
perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That's been fun getting back into those songs.
No. I've already got it set aside. I'm going to have to check that out. Maybe when I'm having a little bit of a quiet moment to myself at the end of the show. Before we jump into the interview, I guess I will mention that I have been turned on. I don't know. I've been really getting into The Way Down, an HBO Max doc series.
Yes.
I'm definitely a sucker for a good cult show. I try not to get too wrapped up types of docuseries, but I don't know. There is too much of my own story and story of people who have been roped into that like really fringe evangelicalism here in Texas. Mm-hmm. And Gwen Chamberlain's a character. I would definitely encourage people to, you know, mindfully and gently, if you have past experiences with religious trauma, but a little bit of Schadenfreude's kind of nice too. It might be nice to check out is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that one is wild.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and jump into the conversation because a couple of weeks ago, we spoke to Marie Delafont about masking, neurodivergent folks in particular, but really any of us who are so distracted by trying to be what we're supposed to be, trying to cover up what we're actually feeling when we're in like these romantic and sexual situations. And we talked a little bit in that episode about how mindfulness was something of an antidote to that type of masking. And I was just curious if you could walk us through that idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, masking, with neurodivergence shows up a lot. And then if we think of just as a human, we're all just like, how do I not let the parts of myself that I don't like be seen by someone else? That's so vulnerable.
Sure.
But yeah, I like the fact that eventually someone is going to find out. You know, like we can only mask for so long anyways. And so even remembering like, oh, this is going to somehow be exposed. I'm going to feel vulnerable at some point. Do I want to feel vulnerable and like I've been lying or just vulnerable? Like, let's go ahead and just like do that part already. You know, and so it is just revealing yourself and it's uncomfortable, but it's knowing like, oh, that's the discomfort you're supposed to feel so that you reduce the shame of that, like part of who you are or what your struggles are or all of that, you know, and so just showing up with that authenticity and doing the practice of it so that it feels more comfortable. Like that's where people get scared of mindfulness too. It's like, oh, that's a great concept, but then they try that or they, you know, try and really just like bring their full selves to the moment and they're like, so this doesn't feel good.
But I didn't like that moment. So why was I there?
Yeah. I'm going to opt out of that moment. Mindfulness is stupid. And it's like, oh no, the moment feels uncomfortable because you have not visited ever or in a long time. Right? So like, this is how it's supposed to feel so that it gets to start feeling normal and safe again.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know I've said this on the show, but it stays super relevant because I do a lot of work with folks who have come out of Christianity. Oftentimes that means coming out of a marriage at like a really young age. Now they're finding themselves out in the dating world for kind of the first time in maybe mid or 20s, a little bit later than that, and have just no idea how to date. And so often I see this fixation on getting the second date, on how do I impress and how do I be who I'm supposed to be? And it, you know, leads to like, I guess, deferring that pain. Instead of, you know, having that tension or that awkwardness now, we're just going to try and cover it up until it maybe is worse later.
Sure. And like people see through us too.
Sure.
You know, like the masking ends up being for us. So we have to remind ourselves like we're not as convincing as we think we are. And so it's a lot harder to uphold the lie and to try so hard when we're not even getting the results we think that we're getting. You know, it's like, I mean, if someone had like a physical thing they were self-conscious about, right? Like, I just don't want someone to see my nose. And so they just act shy or hidden away. It's like, people see your nose. Like, you're just, that's going to happen. So, I mean, whatever you're going to like, go ahead, be self-conscious or try and like only look one direction or whatever you think you can do. But like, it's going to be seen. So,
yeah. Well, so as we talk about mindfulness, then how do you define that? Because I feel like it's one of those words that just gets tossed around to the point of almost feeling meaningsome.
Yeah. It's paying attention on purpose to the present moment with curiosity and acceptance. And so you're just being with what is. And I think acceptance is the part that throws people sometimes because it's like, but what if this is a bad situation?
Sure.
Harm's being done or something. And so acceptance is an endorsement. It just means I see what's in front of me and I accept that this is what the moment is showing. Not, okay, I guess I love this now. So it's just a lot of that curiosity and being with the moment versus working against it or trying to tell too many stories about it.
Yeah. Whether the past is quote good or quote bad, the past is the past. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, coming to a little bit of acceptance around that doesn't mean, like you said, that you're endorsing it. I like that notion of non-judgment being different from non-preference. Like,
we
don't have to judge our past or judge our current experience, but that doesn't mean that we like it or that we won't work change. I mean, I work to be a non-judgmental person, but I'm also doing shit like this every Thursday night in a hope of trying to change the world because I do have a preference, right? Of how things could be better.
Yeah, for sure. And mindfulness too, some people, it's not they get turned off by it, but can be confused because they're like, oh, I have to be like it's this full-blown lifestyle or you have to sit and meditate all the time or the, you know, there's like some level of commitment where it's like, well, I'm not that type of person. So I guess mindfulness, that's just not me. And it's like, oh no, it's such an informal thing. Like it's just a daily thing. It's how you view life. It's an approach. So it's not some like identity that some people get to be that because they have a quieter mind or a zen state of being. And then other people don't get to because they're in their heads too much or whatever else. It's like, oh no, it's a way that you can like interact with the world is mindfully. So not putting that pressure on it of like, oh, if I'm going to be a mindful person, then I have to like do a lot of this extra work.
Yeah. So would it be fair then that strength would be a relevant metaphor or comparison? Because you might think of yourself as a strong person or not a strong person, but we all have some degree of strength and we can like exercise and work that out and make it stronger, whether we are, you know, on one end of the spectrum or the other. There's always something that we can be doing to increase it. And, you know, there might be times in life where we might need a little bit of strength and there's probably real value in putting effort into all of that. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, I like that. I like that analogy with it and totally. And that it is a good tool to have and to lean into because it helps us in the moment. Mindfulness isn't a fit for any given moment, but it's something that is such a great resource whenever we feel so overwhelmed or, you know, lost or like this level of discomfort. It's like this home base to return to. So especially if people are in like a phase of their life where they're trying to understand themselves more or confront really difficult emotions, then it's super helpful to try and increase like that skill set and the practice of it.
Yeah. And I just like the notion of it being very much on spectrum because like you said, it's not something that a certain type of person, you know, I feel like so often people will say, well, I can't meditate. I can't clear my mind and therefore I can't, you know, do any kind of mindfulness practice, which I've never met anybody who claimed to be able to clear their their mind, not in any sort of yeah. like meaningful, like lasting way at all.
Yeah. If I met that person, I'd be like, you're not interesting to me, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit, right?
Yeah.
Well, so you talked about mindfulness having these aspects, acceptance, presence, and all of these different pieces. What's the relationship then between mindfulness, shame, and self-compassion?
Yeah. I mean, they all go together well. For one, shame, people demonize that a lot. Of like, how do I get rid of it? And it's like, oh no, that's a human emotion. So it's cool. It's a helpful messenger. So I kind of see it as like shame is the trigger or the cue that there's some part of you that needs care. Mindfulness is the skill to uncover what's going on. What's the shame about? And then self-compassion is how you tend to yourself. What does it look like to give yourself care in that moment? So I kind of see like this flow chart of an intense feeling, the ability to look at it clearly, and then the capacity to be with yourself to nurture while you're going through it.
Yeah. So the model then is you have a lot of shame around your sexual identity. You find yourself in a romantic situation that seems like it might be heating up or turning into sexuality. And that shame is, I guess, interfering with your mindfulness, your ability to be present, you're distracted, your body is perhaps a little bit distracted and responding to the shame rather than maybe the moment. How does, you know, mindfulness, self-compassion, like how do these tools show up?
Yeah, a lot of it, I think, when things are triggered, for one, not to like be mad at ourselves, like, oh, fuck, here I go again. Like I'm having that experience and this is the one I don't want to have. It's like, well, this is where we're at. Shame is what has shown up. So that's what you're going to interact with. You're not going to interact with the, you know, why do I have the past that I did? Like this failed part of yourself. Like, okay, shame, that's what's up here. And a lot of times we will fixate on something like a specific thing, be it body or performance or whatever, when really we're just humans that want to be loved and accepted. That's what we're scared of in that moment. And then we all have our go-to place of like, okay, what's the vehicle for my need to be loved and my fear of rejection? Okay, maybe it's my body's not enough, or I can't perform, or I can't satisfy someone, or this trauma, this thing I've gone through has made me a damaged person. Mm. So kind of calling ourselves out of like to not fixate on that detail, but to know that, oh, underneath it, some part of me wants to deeply be loved and seen in this moment and secure. So what would it be like to even provide that energy for myself? And it's not like, oh, and then you do that and then you feel great. Like it's a process, you know, and a practice.
Yeah.
But I think we get so lost in like sexual moments and in our head because we keep staying with the wrong subject matter. Mm. We get triggered by, I look disgusting right now. What do they think about me? Oh my gosh. Now I'm being weird because I'm focusing on this. And now, oh gosh, we're out, you know? And so you get all caught up in these thoughts and you keep thinking, if I can just resolve this thing I'm thinking about, then I won't be having this experience I'm having. But it's like, oh, you're just thinking about that because it's an easier thing for your brain to like analyze than that really like intangible existential thing of, I hope that I'm accepted. And so I think the more we just go back to like, what's my core thing happening right now, then we don't have to stay as fixated on these little details that distract us from just the vulnerability of the moment.
Yeah, I like to describe mindfulness as being very much related to focus, not in the sense that like you need to focus, but more in the sense that you are able to sort of select, be mindful, intentional about what choosing to put your attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Because we go in, like we're experiencing it to such a high degree, whatever our shame is in that moment, right? Our partner, I mean, they might be sensing the effects of our shame, but they're not experiencing the same scrutiny about the thing we're scrutinizing about ourselves, you know? So it's like, oh, this isn't even what I have to focus on. It's the easiest thing for me to focus on because my brain wants to jump to this shame place, but it's not the only option in this moment. If there were other things to be present with, what else is there? It makes me think a little bit of the like grounding technique, used in therapy all the time, right? Of like, oh, what are 5 things you see, or, you know, sounds that you hear, like in sexual moments too, remembering like we can, like there can be the narrowing of focus, but then if you're so trapped in it, it's like, realize there is a complete picture going on right now. There's so many other things to tend to.
The one thing that you're worked up about and anxious about is probably in context, not the most important thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I really enjoy that Jon Kabat-Zinn quote that I started the show, which I had to practice like 10 times and not say correctly, but that idea that the most important thing to remember is the most important thing, and that when you find yourself in a maybe stressful but, you know, important important situation, you to choose what you want to highlight, what you want to put your attention on. And that doesn't need to just happen randomly.
Yeah.
So you talked a little bit about grounding exercise, but what are some different strategies or ways for like intentionally cultivating mindfulness in like the heat of the moment?
Yeah, well, I do think remembering that there's a full experience, there's another partner, like even curiosity about your partner or partners. And there's a fine line because it's like, oh yeah, I am curious. I am fucking nervous about what they're thinking in every moment. I'm wondering, it's like, okay, no, that's not curiosity, you know, but like just being tuned into their experience too. So there's a way to like dissipate that energy a little bit. So I think ways to connect with all the aspects of the moment. Also naming a feeling. Like that's my favorite thing, at least, is like if it's going on, it's just going to be trapped in your head. And it's so much easier if you just put something out there of like,
if I'm feeling shame, just
or shame or labeling something, like, you know, just so that it's there and can breathe a little bit. And that can at least open up space for the next moment. Because if not, you're just spiraling in the same repeating moment over and over again in your head, hoping there's like going to be some exit if you just think through enough. And it doesn't happen because there's no new data coming in at that point. So I think that, and also giving yourself permission to not have a moment be special. You know, there can be that pressure of like, it's supposed to be enjoyable at each moment, or someone's or like perfectionism with a sexual experience. And it's like, oh, you can also have just a basic moment. Nothing feels special, or you feel a little disconnected. And just like giving yourself a break to just be a human versus a piece of performance art in that moment.
Yeah, always striving for every moment to always be the best moment ever, instead of just having the moment that you're having.
Yeah, and taking on that role mistakenly of like, I am the provider of their experience too. It's like, oh no, they're a co-creator of this moment as well. So you actually don't have as much work as you feel like you have, you know, of tending to yourself, feeling good, and then also making sure they feel a certain way about themselves and a certain way about you. And it's just like, oh, wait, like that's too many jobs you've signed up for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that notion that mindfulness is about just kind of focusing on the one job, focusing on the one important thing. What are some kind of daily exercises, routines, or some things that you might recommend for just kind of an entry level way of increasing your working out that much?
Yeah. Well, and I personally prefer informal mindfulness, which does mean you're just going throughout the day and being curious, paying attention to the moment. You know, sometimes formal mindfulness practice can be helpful for people to get started, because it can be hard to remember to be mindful throughout the day. So if you're like, oh, I'm actually going to follow along with a guided meditation or something, so that you've got the contained space and direction of just witnessing your thoughts and feelings without trying to change them, I think that can be really helpful for someone that just feels overwhelmed by how to be mindful. It's like there's a little bit of structure, so people can incorporate it as part of the routine. I think also it would be like picking tasks that you just slow down for, so that you notice what it's like to be in the experience that you're having, you know, and not slow down for it where it has to be magical. Like this is, I get it a little bit with this idea of mindfulness somehow should infuse each moment with a transcendent quality. Mm. It's like, no, that's cool if it happens, you know, but like sometimes you're looking at a beautiful mountain and you're like, okay, yeah, that's a mountain and that's okay, right? It doesn't have to be like, I'm moved by the spirit. And it's just like,
awe and wonder and majesty are beautiful emotions, but we don't have to like force them or fake them in order to have like a spirit.
Yeah. And so if you're doing the dishes or whatever, like sure, plenty of articles you can read online. It's like, oh, mindfulness of daily chores. And there can be this pressure of like, okay, I'm going to be so mindful that there's like gratitude. And like, I don't know, now it's a sensual experience with the dish show, but really it's just like, oh no, it could still be boring, but you're actually, you know what your hands are doing in that moment. You know what the sensation feels like. You're just getting attuned to all of the like pieces of that moment versus just being on autopilot. So I think you can pick tasks like that where you're like, oh, I'm going to just pay attention to every little piece of this with curiosity. And then sometimes too, like reflecting at the end of the day, I think can be helpful. Like, I mean, throughout the day, ask yourself questions of like, what just happened right there? Or what's the feeling under that feeling? You know, that's a good way to notice when we're like telling ourselves stories versus when we're actually in the moment. But that can
just
be tricky.
Cultivate some self-awareness by kind of asking yourself those questions.
Yeah. But if it's hard to remember to do it, if you even have a practice end of the day where you're like, all right, what was the story I was operating from today? Was it the world was against me, or like I'll never be respected, or like people suck, or, you know, it's not judging it one way or the other. Like a good person wouldn't think that. It's just noticing it over time, even seeing patterns of like, oh, wow, I really operate in this specific way a lot. How is that serving me? What's that about? Mm-hmm. So any way that you can kind of force yourself to pause and explore that, be it in the moment if you remember it, or if it's hard to remember, setting aside some time, morning, evening, to be intentional about reflecting on things.
Yeah, I think that's how acceptance, non-judgment show up. Because if you don't like these things about yourself, you're less likely to notice them. You're less likely to be aware of the trends and to, you're going to kind of bury them from yourself. But if mm-hmm. you're able to say that I accept these things about myself, then you can be present with them. And that is kind of what gives you the power and the ability to actually do something about it.
100%. Like that's, I'm sure you see this with your clients as well. Like people's biggest issue is they are terrified of parts of themselves. It's not mm-hmm. the part of themselves. You know, it's what happens if I look at it. Will I be consumed by this? You mm-hmm. know, will I spiral into shame?
Am I endorsing it? Am I making it stronger or saying it's okay?
Yeah. Yeah. And also it's like, if we see that part of ourselves and we can't change it immediately, then we're like, oh God, yeah. Then what does that say about me? So it's people's resistance to just acknowledging like, huh, that's a tendency I have. Okay. Like that's where they get more in trouble, because you have to expend so much energy controlling that stuff and ignoring it or deflecting it in some way or making up stories to justify that, because you don't want to just name it for what it is. You know, mm-hmm. A big story for me is that I'm too much. And I also have to acknowledge, like, how do I say this? There's some part where we shouldn't be buying into these stories, right? These are lies that we tell ourselves that keep us stuck. And there's another part where it's like, you know what? I can be a lot. Like I just can be. But I don't have to hate myself for that. Like there was no clipboard for me to sign up when I was being born of like, hey, which tendency do you want to have? What traits are you going to have? You know, it's like, I don't know. This is just how I learned to respond to the world. And so if I treat myself like that too much feeling is somehow my failure, then yeah, I'm going to run from it, not want to explore it at all. And it's going to actually control me so much more. But if I'm like, you know what? Sometimes that's my tendency. Sometimes I'm not too much, but it's easy for me to think that. I can pause in certain moments and recognize, like, am I being a lot right now because I'm afraid of something and it's the only coping mechanism I know? Or like, I'm actually fine in this moment. I just feel vulnerable and it's easy for me to tell myself, uh-oh, I'm probably too much, because that's just the story that makes sense. So being able to get acquainted with all these different parts of yourself and realize like there's no bad part that you're going to uncover. It's just information. So you get to actually play with it a little bit more.
Well, and that model is just so in contrast to everything that we learn and experience when we grow up in the church, particularly in a very Catholic or guilt and shame oriented tradition, or in a more evangelical take every thought captive kind of tradition. There is so much a notion that your thoughts are your sin, and that you are not only responsible for those, but that by paying attention, by noticing that you are making them worse, and that if you like truly believe that those thoughts would never exist. So the very fact that you even had that thought says a lot about who you are as a person, about your willingness to be committed to God and to these kinds of things. So I know a lot of these ideas that we're talking about sound sort of simple on the surface, but there's a good reason why it takes so much time and energy to really integrate them into our life.
For sure. And it's like, we don't want to see these things because we feel like they're our failure. So, I mean, it's a pretty good coping strategy, honestly, to be like, you don't exist, or I'm going to demonize this thought, you know, because we're just like, why would I invite the bad in? You know, so it does take a little bit of bravery to be like, okay, can I sit with the discomfort of trying to see this as just a neutral aspect of what it is to be a human versus it having to be some specific personal failing or whatever. It's like, for any thought or feeling to show up, it couldn't be there unless a human was capable of having that experience. Like
that common humanity idea.
Yeah, you're not so flawed and like special in your brokenness that you have somehow found this dirty, evil, dark spot and then taken it. And now that is your horrible sin. That is your like thing to carry. It's like, oh no, it was in the word bank. You know, like
people have been doing that shit for a long time. You're not special.
Exactly.
Well, I want to talk a lot more about how this can tie to relationships, the way that ourselves, our sex lives, and a lot of these different things. But before we do, I want to jump on the phones real quickly, if we can, and talk to Noah, Oklahoma. Noah, what's on your mind tonight?
Hello. Yes, I have quite a few things on my mind. Mm-hmm. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
okay.
Go right
I have quite a few things to ask you guys. The first thing was, like, how do I deal with people, like, using hate speech and, like, purposely misgendering me because I'm trans? And it happens quite often on campus. People will be like, call me he, and it really annoys me.
Sure. Yeah, well, I guess it really depends a little bit on the circumstance. I don't know that I could come in from the outside and universally tell you exactly how to approach those situations. I definitely want to empower you and say that you have the right to make those choices as you need. So as much as I would love to sit here and be like, you shouldn't stand for that and you need to tell those people, blah, maybe you should, but maybe not. That might not be the energy that you have today. That fight may not be worth fighting for that day. That fight may not be safe in that. But I definitely want to just acknowledge the pain.
Yeah. And also, you know, I've been like really scared of like the laws that are going into place right now, like in Texas and Oklahoma. Pretty concerning with the anti-trans laws, the anti-abortion laws.
Yeah. Y'all really one-upped us on the abortion front. Time is a flat circle. Existence is pain. I don't know what the hell is going on. The news is absolute wild. I suppose I'll acknowledge we didn't talk at the top about everything that happened in Uvalde recently. Jesus Christ, it is impossible to turn on the news without feeling pretty broken right now. And I guess, Noah, all I can really do is empathize on that particular.
Yeah, it's really concerning, especially with the Roe versus Wade being overturned, too. Like, it's just so much discrimination right now, and it's hard to deal with.
Sure.
That's why I tend to stay out of the news, because it's just too negative all the time, and I have to keep myself positive and just learn to cope with what's going on. I'm actually the vice president of my group on campus, and I try to help people just, you know, through the tough time and, you know, help myself cope, too. It's been really hard.
Yeah, I'm glad that you have that connection. And I think that those relationships can be really valuable. But, you know, you also, I suppose, need to be additionally mindful about your own burnout fatigue and how exhausting it can be to care for others. There's a lot there. Callie, when it comes to avoiding the news and wanting to stay mindful and wanting to, like, support other people, but also not wanting to overextend yourself and, you know, just all of these different things moving around, is there any advice you might be able to add here?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think avoidance is a helpful strategy. It gets a bad rap, or distraction, or whatever. And it's just knowing, you know, that line between it's serving you and then not serving you, you know? So I think news can be overwhelming, and we don't want to have that idea of like, oh, if I have to take a break from it, that means I don't care about these things, or, you know, like I'm not actually an advocate or whatever else. But it's also okay to do that, knowing you're still holding on to your values. And I think even you, like being vice president, I think that's what you said, the chair, like that's such a good way of having action to help deal with helplessness, right? Like that's a great thing to do.
Yeah.
And then I think it is all of us monitoring, like, oh, am I like physically exhausting myself? Like, am I feeling like there's a chance that I'm about to fail someone? Because when we start noticing that pressure kick in a little bit, that might be an indicator of, oh, this isn't just me giving back or being engaged. I've now taken on a role that is too big for one person to have. Mm-hmm. And so can I give myself permission to step back or ask for help or, you know, whatever else?
Yeah, we just lost our advisor too. The university let her go. And that was heartbreaking too. So it's just been really hard with the new change that's happening on campus. We had a drag event recently, and I don't think the president of OSU liked it. So it's just like, it's been really hard with everything that's going on with the, you know, the conservative people in town being pretty hateful and judgmental. So I'm actually originally from Dallas, but I moved up to Stillwater School. So yeah, I go, you know, Dallas. Yeah, it's just been really hard because, you know, I'm in a small town now with a bunch of red conservative Republicans, and it's hard because they love to fight back.
Yeah, Stillwater and College Station, where I was stationed for university, is a very, very similar environment. My heart breaks thinking about you walking across campus and having to deal with that kind of bullshit. So I'm glad that you're willing to to take care of yourself and that you have some community around you. Hopefully some of the things that we are talking about tonight, as well as last time Callie was here, we were talking more about self-compassion, might be some strategies that could be useful, because there is no honest solution. But I do hope that we can offer some ideas on how to better take care of yourself, and that, hopefully over this summer, you're able to get a little bit of a breather.
Yeah, that's kind of why I took off on classes, because it was too stressful. So I was like, I'm going to take a summer off and just take an internship and kind of explore myself a little bit and just, you know, take it slow and, you know, really focus more on LGBTQ rights and not overindulging myself, but I want to help other people too, because I'm a huge empathetic person. So sure. I care about others and myself too. Sometimes I, you know, deny myself enough self-care. So I need to, you know, focus on myself too, because that's not selfish to focus on yourself. You know, for all the people who are listening, like, always make sure that you have your health, your mental health, your physical health is good, because, you know, if you deny yourself the needs that you need, then you're going to, you know, be hurting. It's not good.
No, I appreciate you saying it. I wish we had more concrete solutions for you, but was there anything else that you wanted to touch on or that we might be able to help out with today?
Yes, I was curious about, what do you guys think about the sex education system right now? That's another topic I was kind of thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, I can only like sort of gesture vaguely at the almost 4-year backlog of this show, which is desperately hoping to fill some sort of gap that clearly exists in our society. I think the only thing that I could really say definitively is that when I talk to the sex educators that I know, friends that I have that work in schools and things, it's not getting better. Not in our area, according to the people that I know and that I talk. It is bad, and it's been bad, and it feels very much getting worse. When we look at all of increases in restrictions on what can even be discussed in schools, whether we're talking about history or basic science, sex education is suffering in all of them.
Definitely. I went to the Stillwater Public Schools, and I kind of fought for the trans kids there that were, their parents were being really hateful and they were trying to take away their rights. So I went there and I showed my support. I'm actually on the live stream, and, you know, I just went there to show my support for the people, because they're trying to take away basic rights for kids, and it's messed up. And I know the sex education system is really bad in Oklahoma too. They don't teach people enough about gender and sex and the differences and how you identify. I really wish that was taught more in public schools, because in the university, I've learned so much just by my one class that I've taken, like Intro to Gender Women's Studies. If anybody can take that, it's an excellent class to go through the history of, you know, everything in America. And it really teaches you, like, to accept yourself and your bodies. And it's great.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you are starting to fill in that knowledge gap a little. And I think that's honestly not the best system, but it's kind of the system that we have. So good on you for doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, because growing up, my parents did not teach me much about sexuality at all. I was, you know, told that I should be straight because I have super religious parents. And unfortunately, that's just how my parents told me to act. Is like, you need to deny your sexual desires. You need to, you know, just be like this model that the Bible wants you to be. And I just fought with that for so long. 2 years ago, I just gave up Christianity because I could not, you know, I looked at all the things that Christianity says, like Matt Dillahunty pointed out. And I was like, I just can't deal with those things, like slavery and, you know, misogynistic things in the Bible and denying, you know, my homosexuality for so long. I couldn't do it anymore. So I had to accept myself for who I am and stop shaming myself. And I started my transition this year. It's been great. I've been on HRT and, you know, I've had a lot of support. Unfortunately, my mom's side of the family has completely shunned me, but it was worth it to me because I'm finally myself. Even though people on my mom's side of the family can be very hateful on Facebook and stuff, you know, I just ignore it. And I just take my dad's side of the family, who's really supporting, and that's who I talk to.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you feel that you are making progress. It sounds like you have put an incredible amount of work into taking care of yourself and taking care of your community. And all I can say is thank you so much for sharing your story with us, because it
sounds like it's, I don't want to take up any more of your guys' time, but I will still listen. And so You guys have a great day. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you so
much.
Yeah. Callie, speaking of like just being present with a problem rather than trying to hide it, parents talking about sex, really just our culture being willing to talk about sex. I mean, in everyday relations or even in our sexual relationships, how comfortable are we typically in being able to talk about sex? It's no wonder that we have so many challenges and we have so many industries built up to try and like supplement our sexuality.
Yeah. And another good reminder of like our struggles are in the context of so many other things, right? Instead of isolating of like, oh, I have a hard time talking about sex or feeling comfortable or what's wrong with me. It's like, oh, you're also part of a bigger system. So like cut yourself some slack for the fact that certain things are inherently difficult because of what we're exposed to, even on like an unconscious level. And I appreciated Noah talking about too, like it getting to the point of the suffering was too much, right? Like,
yeah, you have to be present with yourself to notice that.
Yeah, it's that we're so scared of what would it be like to make contact with my pain. We're afraid of what's going to happen, but also we don't get to grow until we do make contact. So mm-hmm. we don't want to put that as like, oh, that's where all the bad things get you. It's like, oh no, like healing comes from the experience of fear and safety getting to coexist, you know? Like I like to imagine you know, that feeling of like someone's like tickling back your neck, like chasing you, like you're home alone and you know there's no one there, right? But you're like, fucking what's behind, you know, and you just want to like run, you know, which is fine sometimes. Okay, run to your room, you feel fine. But if every day you have that sensation and you're like, fuck it, I gotta run, because it's just like there's so much power in standing still in that moment and letting it fully wash over you of this fear of someone's about to get me, like I can feel them right behind me. Stand there, let it happen. There will be an acute sensation, and at the same time you will realize that that moment is perfectly fine. And so the combination of those two things of like I can experience something that's really uncomfortable and I know I'm okay, like, that's where we get to grow and open up more, and it just gets easier and easier to deal with these uncomfortable things.
Yeah, I mean in a lot of ways I think you just sort of like re-described what therapy is, but or maybe even what life is in a lot of ways, that just willingness to be present with the things that are uncomfortable or that challenge. We're gonna talk a little bit more about relationships and some of these different things, but first let's take a quick moment to see what's been going on around the rest of recognize aspects you might otherwise be completely unfamiliar. Like how many people in the last 20 minutes learned the word futinaria and suddenly discovered that, oh goodness, maybe I need to open up another tab.
We want to just tell everyone now, like, I'm an atheist, because where you all did was proclaim our post-process. Hard to do that having there.
I don't know how common Sherwood's was, those types of rituals. There was some strange stuff, but nowadays this type of stuff is generally confined around, you know, some extreme sexual fetishes.
Or Sunday mass.
It's like saying the king of the United States has a beard. Well, until you show me that there's a king of the United States, the proposition's false. But you go, oh, well, the king of the United States doesn't have a beard. That proposition's also false. Wait a second. He either has a beard or he doesn't have a beard. How can they both be false? Well, they're both false because there's no king of the United States.
How old do you think our solar's?
Not more than 10,000 years. I mean,
okay, well, you're wrong about that, though.
Okay, well, I know that this is a little bit of an unfair question. It's a little big, but let's see if we can break it down at all. And I'd love for you to kind of describe or help us understand the difference between what we might call a mindful relationship or a relationship where you're maybe more present versus one that is mindless or built on shame. Is that even a fair dichotomy?
Yeah, I think so. And it makes me think a little bit about the meditation part too. Like, oh, there's a right way. Like someone who's mindful, there's this idealism.
They meditate.
To it.
They sit on cushions, light incense.
Yeah. And so with this idea of like, what does a mindful relationship look like? People have to make sure they're not assuming there's a lack of reactivity, or that it's like, oh, if I have a mindful, healthy relationship, that means we don't bring in our own shame or issues or react disproportionately. It's like, oh no, you still get to be two humans colliding together, which is a fucking shit show. And hopefully it goes as well as possible, you know?
Yeah.
Beautiful things get to happen, but like we still show up in all of our humanity. So to have a mindful relationship doesn't mean you don't have issues, but I think it's about having that awareness enough to know, like, what am I bringing into a relationship? What are my own things that play out over and over again in all areas of my life that inevitably will show up with this person that I love, no matter how great they are? Like, these parts of me will emerge, and being able to name that so that it's not a reactivity or like a blame situation. So I feel like a mindful relationship is honest communication, taking personal responsibility, still having your moments and being immature, you know, all of that exists, but you're able to discuss it from like that place of care, not blaming, and that curiosity, and also like treating relationship like it's a team or group sport, whatever dynamic you've got where it's its own entity as well. So there's your own needs, partner's needs, but also the relationship has its needs too. And so people coming together to say, oh, that matters is what we need to tend to us as a unit. And what does our relationship need from us in order to stay healthy and thriving, keep us close, versus just what can my partner do for me so I get to feel secure? Okay, what do they want me to do so they feel secure? Mm-hmm. It's like there's also this experience y'all are creating together. So I feel like mindful relationship is just about intentionality, not perfection. And then maybe a mindless relationship can look like just reactivity. Someone's a hero, someone's a villain at any given point, or being very checked out because we don't want to experience discomfort or have hard conversations. So we just make it easy. You know, we decide that we don't have any issues. So that's pleasant, you know? So yeah, I think
it's a little bit like covering up the check engine car. Yeah. It'd be really nice not to have any issues. And if you can convince yourself that you don't have, and then you can find yourself on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. It's like put a post-it note over the check engine light. Your hood's always down, so you don't see an engine. So yeah, I don't believe an engine exists actually. And I think it's all intact.
Yeah. Well, to that end, are there particular when you are getting to that point where you are just kind of coasting, pretending that the relationship is fine, when maybe starting to smoke in other ways, sort of escaping or not being present with the relationship? What are the indicators?
I mean, I think if you're attuned to like some shift, you know, if you used to feel deeper connection and less, and it's not that a shift in a relationship indicates a problem in the relationship, that can be the natural flow. But if there's something you can compare to, or you're like, huh, I've kind of been in a different space, feeling differently, like that's something to notice. Or like if you start being a version of yourself that you're like not a fan of, and that's not a thing to judge yourself for, but if just, I don't know, you're reacting in ways that you're like, this doesn't even line up with who I've known myself to be. Mm-hmm. Like that can be something where maybe you're not addressing things in the relationship and it's just like spilling over within yourself. Or if you feel that like lack of connection with a partner, or even increasing substances, which can include phone, but I mean, like anything to just somehow make the day easier, or
those kind of like numbing behaviors or escaping behaviors.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, and relying on that to be able to feel close to a partner again, maybe. So yeah, if there's a lot of attraction, you're being a version of yourself that you're not as acquainted with, or maybe just feeling some like disorientation to your own life can be a trigger, like a cue for you to be like, what's going on? And not that the relationship has to be at fault for, you know, maybe we are struggling with something else, but
or,
I think.
Or not that there's ever even anything quite wrong with being a little bit mindless from time, you know?
Yeah.
Like all of these things are just part of being a person, and that's okay, even if we might want to be aware of it's happening and potentially do it, right?
Yeah. Cause I think it's about like not overanalyzing the moment, but checking in about patterns. The patterns, mm-hmm. that's what's going to tell us something more interesting. You know, like if I'm bored in any given moment, I don't have to freak out. Like, I was bored today in my relationship. Maybe we don't excite each other. Maybe it's like, I was bored. I don't care, whatever. Right. But if like, oh, and that's a thing I feel over and over again, then that's when we start maybe exploring it a bit more. So mm-hmm. yeah, it would be exhausting if like being mindful to stuff is like, I'm paying attention so hard and everything I need to know what this indicates and this indicates. It's just like, no, that's
maybe the difference between what like mindfulness and maybe hypervigilance is. Yes. Is just holding it with like a loose grasp, I guess. Yeah,
for sure. Because then, I mean, people can use mindfulness in a way that doesn't serve them, because it's actually perpetuating their fear and their narrative that like, I must understand every moment fully in order to be at peace in this world, or in order to be safe.
And if so, I'm not perfectly skillful all the time, always. Mm-hmm. By that same token, are there particular warning signs that you might highlight when we're being a little bit mindless or ungrounded sex life?
Well, no. I mean, you feel it. I feel like that's one where it's a little more like hard to ignore. You can ignore confronting it, but it's hard to ignore the experience of it. I mean, if in the moment you're not enjoying yourself, you're denying needs, there's physical pain, there like all of that stuff. I mean, that's
Denying your needs, like it seems like such a basic thing. But Marty Klein talks a lot about how if people would just be willing to admit when they have a cramp, their sex lives would probably go up like 20% by 20%. Like if we were just willing to say, no, I need to move a little bit to the left instead of trying to like force our way through it and, you know, be like so wrapped up in the moment that we don't even care about the fact that it's 60 degrees in here. And nobody wants to have sex in a cold room. Like it's fine to make a change.
Yeah. We're in our head. We're like, I'm going to prove that I'm the best sexual partner you've ever had because I experienced no other factors here. I'm so good. I don't know. I'm freezing. Okay.
Right.
Don't you want more of this?
Yeah. One, and then the thing that I saw is almost the opposite sense that we get so fixated trying to have right type. We're so present with how the sex that we're having isn't living up to expectation, or maybe it's not as good as what we saw on TV, or maybe it's not as great as the greatest sex we ever had. And because we're so badly and desperately trying to get back some sort of Shangri-La, have the right type of experience, we can kind of be mindless and forget to have the experience that we're actually having.
Yeah, 100%. And I think there's a healthy space for trying to create something or, you know, going in of like, oh, I remember this experience or I saw this, like I would love for that to play out right now. So, I mean, that can be a resource for just, you know, a feeling you want to have, way you want to be, but it's no longer mindful if you are resisting what the moment tells you is happening. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, if I'm talking with someone and they don't speak the same language of me, I can't just yell louder and all of a sudden comprehension occurs, you know? So it's like, you don't want to stay so stuck in the way you are being intentional about the experience you're trying to create that anything that goes against it, you're like, well, I'll just do that experience better. I'm going to like, it's going to happen. Damn
it.
It's
going to double down on it.
Yeah, it's like, no, you're going to have an interaction with what this reality is. Let them meet each other. They're not winning. Like, it's just more data and you're working with that. You're aware of like, okay, this isn't playing out in that way, which doesn't mean, oh, well, this is a bad one. Like it didn't go well. It's just like, oh, okay. I got some information that says this is how it's starting to feel. What happens if I follow that path and trust that each moment will lead to the next moment versus that feeling of I'm in this moment. I'm uncomfortable. It's not what I want it to be. So let me calculate how I can do this. Okay. I want to go to that moment now. Like there's just so much work and you're so far removed from what's going on versus like, I mean, if I fart while sleeping with someone, like, what am I going to get in my head? I'm like, well, that's the most disgusting thing ever. And then what it's like, oh, now I'm so far removed. Like, this is about to get weird. But if I were just if I were able to laugh, because it's like, well, that is a silly sound to come out of a body. What's the next moment that would follow that? Probably laughter, because that's what we do when something's silly. And what happens when we laugh with the person we're with? There's kind of a sweetness. And then we get to join in that experience or reset, you know? So having faith that the moment will take you to the next moment that needs to happen versus feeling that pressure that we are the director in some big way of each new moment. And that if we don't intervene, the moment won't support us. It's like the moment will always support us. We have to just trust and honor what it's showing.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that so much of mindfulness, just willingness to trust in yourself to handle the situation as it arises,
yes,
you know, to
exactly.
Not like script out in your mind, well, when we have that conversation, this is what else, and then she'll probably say this, and then this is how I'm going to respond. Just being willing to say, I don't to have all out. Indeed, I can trust myself or my future self to handle this much better than I possibly could now without all the information.
Yeah, 100%. Like there's so much trust. And then we have a hard time with it because we're like, but I haven't proven myself trustworthy. So how am I supposed to trust in this ideal self that I want to be, but maybe I can't handle it. And it's kind of like, yeah, that is kind of the nature of trust, actually. You know, like we're going backwards if it's like, yeah, I would trust myself, but I haven't earned it. It's like you need to kind of take that leap of faith and let yourself show up in that moment and see if you can, you know, like be brave for a split second to tolerate the discomfort and keep moving forward. Or you realize like, shit, I'm just perpetuating the cycle. And that's okay too. Like we don't want to feel like a failure of like, well, I tried to be mindful. I was going to trust myself. I was present. I did all the right things. And look, I still have my issues. It's like, that's okay. Cause the shit's hard. Like, you know, so just keep doing it. Don't don't use every little negative piece as like the nail in the coffin of why you are this dysfunctional person that can never have the experience you want and you'll never be able to be present enough. It's just like, no, that if it was easy, we'd already be doing it automatically, but we don't because it's not easy. It's straightforward and simple, but it's not easy. And so being patient with ourselves too, so that we know like, oh, this is a process versus I'm going to go into my next sexual encounter and I'm going to be mindful and I'm just going to go with the flow and it's going to be beautiful because I'm finally going to be present and let go of all these stories in my head. And then you get in the experience and you're like, well, fuck me. Here we go. Having the same thoughts, I've feeling
ruined it all.
Yeah. It's like, that's okay. You're not, don't focus on the outcome as the thing to determine, you know, can I still try and be even present with the fact that I'm disappointed I couldn't be as present, you know, like mm-hmm. just add more presence even to the parts that you would normally label as like, oh, I messed it up. Like diet starts tomorrow sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, and change is gradual. You know, yes. we tend to think that if we made a mistake that we should just give up and throw in the towel. Do you have tips or thoughts how to maybe begin that process or how to gradually become a little bit more heat of the moment or in those sexual situations?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's the general mindfulness of tuning into what's your body feeling? What are your thoughts? You know, kind of trying to track the present moment. Mm-hmm. But I think some like background work that someone can do is being aware of what your core beliefs are that you carry with you everywhere. Mm-hmm. Our sex life is one area where we show up. We show up in a lot of different ways, you know? And so sometimes we can like relegate sex life to like, oh, here's this other separate facet of me and all my dysfunction lives here. And I've got to, how do I fix who I am sexually? Mm. And it's like, oh, but I bet the stories that come up, the things that preoccupy you, the things that take you away from the moment are beliefs you have about yourself as an individual. And so the more you can kind of inquire within yourself of like, oh, what, you know, if it's I have to earn love. Like maybe that's a core belief that you've just been operating from, then it makes sense that in your sex life, maybe you overgive. Maybe you specifically have an issue with having any needs and you actually, it's hard for you to even know you're denying your needs because you're so deadened to them. You know what I mean? Because all your sure. focus is like, no, please someone else or whatever. And then that's how we're accepted and safe. And so if you become aware of like what stories you carry with you day to day, I think that makes it easier to know what to pay attention to because it can be overwhelming sometimes if we're like, all right, I'm going to be more mindful and present. And then we're just like thrown into it and we're like, fuck, we're like, I don't even know what's what anymore. Now I'm feeling a lot of things and now I can't focus. And so if you know that there's a kind of a pattern and a core belief, then like look at how that's showing up in your next sexual experience, you know, or if someone feels damaged, like if that's just a belief of there's something broken and damaged about me, they might recognize that, oh, they go into a sexual encounter almost apologizing before they began behaviorally or verbally or like caveats, you know, just like FYI, here all this happened with me and okay, it started, you know.
Here's everything that's broken, everything I hate about myself. Try not to make any of it worse. And let's have great sex.
So I think if people become more self-aware, like what are those stories I have? You have an easier guide of knowing what to look for and what you're like the easy places for you to detach when you're sleeping with someone or overcompensate or, you know, so I just like the idea of a person knowing themselves fully helps them show up sexually and in relationship versus picking apart the dynamic too much. It's like, oh, what do I have going on within me that's going to play out here? And how can I tend to that feeling a little different?
Yeah, well, so then do you have particular advice for just being a little bit more self-passionate, a little bit more kind, a little bit mindful when it comes to things like our body or our actual performance or some of the other areas of shame that tend to show up in our love life?
Yeah, I think we all have it. So that reminder of like, everyone's got something like, what's your flavor? You know, we all feel whatever we're like, we all feel shame to the same intensity. It's just a different thing, you know, and it's easy for us to qualify our own as like, yeah, but I'm like broken times 12. That person's like broken times two. So it's a little different. You know, I've got more like work to do. I'm shittier. And just like, no, across the board, we all have the same intensity with the shame. So like, you're not alone, even if you feel isolated in the specific of your situation. And I think it's trusting like an experience will be what it is. And you're gonna like, if it's a sexual experience, it's like, okay, and it'll be over. And maybe it's satisfying. Maybe it's not, you know, but like you don't have to almost do like a play-by-play of, oh, well, that's where I went wrong there. And then this, and then that's what led to whatever. This is a really ridiculous analogy. I don't even know how it connects, but I'm thinking of like, if we get into an Uber, right? We just get whatever driver shows up. We have enough, trust that like, all right, I put in the destination. I believe I will get there. I don't know who the fuck's driving me. And if this is going to be a dreadful drive, because, oh God, they're talking too much, or they're a shitty driver, or okay, that is not the turn. Where are they going? Okay, this took us 10 extra minutes, you know, like, but we can handle that ride, and it can be a little bit imperfect, but we're not.
But it'll be fine. Yeah.
We're just like, all right. And that's an interesting story to tell, you know? And so a sexual experience is like, make space for the fact that, like, I don't know, maybe like you won't be your best self. You won't be as secure. Like you'll look back and be like, you know what? My stomach did look like Jabba the Hutt. And like, okay, you know, like this neutrality. I feel strongly about neutrality. There's this whole like positivity thing, which I think is great, has its place. But sometimes I think self-compassion can be hard if we're trying to be like so enthusiastic about the parts of ourselves we struggle with.
Yeah.
That you're like, I'm lying to myself. And it's like, well, that's not going to serve you to try and be like, oh, wait, no, I actually, this is my favorite part of my body. This, you know, it's like, it does not have to be.
Trying to fake it. Yeah. I read an interesting study recently about folks who use mantras, and in particular, like those positive affirmations where you just like stare at yourself in the mirror and say like, I'm good enough, I'm strong enough, doggone it, people like me. And what it basically came down to was that those things can be useful, but only if you believe, like if you know that you're lying to yourself, or if look at yourself in the mirror and say, I love myself, I love myself, I love myself, but you really don't. Or if you're really struggling with that idea, if it rings hollow to you, it's actually going to increase the stress, distress, you know, that sense of just not being right.
Exactly. And I think it's all about like, how is something being used? Because I think the part that helps about mantras, or if it's staring like, I love myself, it's to provide additional dialogue from what you normally hear. It's not to force that information to you. It can be a practice of, okay, here's this thing that I wish I believed, but like, whew, no part of me believes it.
You're not trying to brainwash yourself.
Yeah. What does it feel like in my body when I try and sit with that as a truth? Not make myself believe it, but just what does it even feel like for that to be a thing I name? And then every part of you might resist it. And that becomes an interesting, curious thing of like, wow, like I really want to push that away. You know, so I think positive, you know, affirmations like that are good when they're a tool to help you hear different things and explore the sensation of letting other realities and truths in. But it's never like, you don't want to use a bulldozer to try and love yourself. Like it's just, that's a lot of carnage, you know?
Yeah.
So it provides the loving talk, all of that. But and it's someone, you're saying it to yourself so that you get the experience of hearing it, not to test yourself of, are you going to believe it yet, you stupid piece of shit? Like we told ourselves we're great and you still don't believe it. Like you don't want it to be something like that to set yourself up.
Yeah. Well, so we are walking through a lot of different things. And in some ways we're touching over and over on the same question, but it's just such a big topic. And so I wanted to kind of check in again, if I could, if there was any recommendations for daily practices or daily strategy for, I think, just becoming more aware of where we are and what's going on. Any particular ways to stop what we're doing and maybe bring ourselves into that present moment?
That stop what we're doing and say, what's happening in this moment? I think with increased self-awareness, it opens us up to like just paying attention to more things in the world. And so that naturally will create more space for us to ask some questions of like, how did I just react? What happened there? But even just like tactically, like put reminders in your phone. I know that sounds real basic, but like,
yeah,
if you know that you have the ability to do it, you're like, okay, all this stuff makes sense. Okay, I can ask myself these questions, but it's so hard to figure out when, or it becomes a blur. Same thing with clients in therapy, right? It's like you go over stuff and then they go back to the regular life and they're like, wait, I know there were things I was supposed to think
sure.
in this moment. Wait, what was I supposed to do again? Was it this? Like, we just kind of forget all of that. So
most important thing is to remember the most important thing.
Yes. So if you can do strategies like that to make it like something concrete, so a reminder to check in, or literally a physical check-in. Again, mindfulness does not need to be about some deep, like, okay, I'm inquiring and I'm going to learn something really big about it. It's just like, oh no, I'm just paying attention to the whole experience. And so I know for myself too, like I can go days and days without noticing anything in my body. Like I'm just fucking going, right? And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm not well. And, you know, but there were signs. signs. We just weren't tuned into them because we don't have that practice. So there's the, you know, being aware of what am I thinking, what am I feeling, but also the physical sensations of, oh, I'm going to pause after this meal or something, and just being like, am I connect? Do I even know what my knee is doing right now? So those are small practices that are, they're easier too, because they, if you're someone who really struggles with looking at yourself, like if it just, if it's really scary to do that, then at least going to some of these, like, oh, it's just a physical sensation. It's more of a neutral space for you to practice the skill. So if you, if someone notices like, okay, I'm going to try and be mindful and all the self-inquiry and whatever else, and you just get flooded with too much stuff, then find more neutral ground for the, that skill of paying attention without judgment.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, before we start to wrap up for the night, I'd like to talk to Kristen in North Carolina. Kristen, what's going on tonight?
Hey, nothing much. I decided to call in kind of on a whim. I love ACA. I listen to all your shows, and I don't know, y'all are talking about mindfulness right now, and that got me excited because I love mindfulness.
Oh, awesome. Glad how has mindfulness shown up for you, and I suppose your love?
Oh, in my love life? Well, I was diagnosed with a personality disorder while I was in college. And because I'm a working class American, I can't always afford healthcare. Sure. So mindfulness is a good tool that I learned like while I was in therapy. And then when I can't afford therapy, I can still use it like in my daily life. Mm. So in my relationships, it kind of it helps ground me, especially when I'm in an argument. It helps ground me as to like, okay, what's really going on and what can I do? That's kind of where I go whenever I practice mindfulness. Just what can I feasibly do in this moment?
I love that.
And
sorry, I didn't mean to interject, but I just so appreciated what you're saying about like, even when you can't go to therapy and it being grounding, it's like, that's what's so powerful is mindfulness gets to be an anchor point to return back to. So I just love that you're able to grasp it as a thing that can be incorporated as like, oh, there's always like home. Home exists somewhere at all times for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and it helps me hold myself personally accountable too. So I can kind of look back and reflect and admit when I've done wrong. It has also helped me, like I've been in a couple of bad relationships, and it helped me realize that it was a bad relationship, because when you're in something like that, it seems so blurry. But then when you take a moment to really reflect on the present and where you are in the moment and what you can feasibly do about the moment, it kind of puts things in perspective. Like, wait a minute, like he did say that and that was hurtful. And yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate that notion, because so often when we start talking about self-acceptance, self-compassion, the thought process is, oh, we're just letting ourselves off the hook. Oh, we're just making it too easy on ourselves. Or, oh, we are never going to grow if we just accept ourselves as we are. And so I really appreciate you highlighting the fact that your mindfulness practice can help you to stay accountable to strength, whether they are like trends yourself and things that you might want to change, or recognizing that, you know, there are bigger things outside of your life, or rather in your environment outside of yourself, that you might need to change, whether that's a relationship or something else.
Right. Right. And I've encountered, I worked in the mental health field too. And I've encountered people who are like really afraid to do that. And so they practice mindfulness in a way where, like you said, they kind of exonerate themselves from responsibility or make excuses for themselves. And I feel like that's where the definition of mindfulness can kind of become muddled, just because people are just using it for different things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to acknowledge that it is one of those words that I feel like, I mean, I feel like you can take anything and just put the word mindful in front of it, and it can become a marketing ploy really, really quick. And I'll go ahead and say that therapists in particular can maybe be a little bit of a sucker. And it's frustrating when folks are like legitimately wanting to change their life, and all they're getting is, you know, a bunch of YouTube videos about, you know, manifesting a better world by believing it.
Yeah.
And kind of deluding yourself through that fake mindfulness, fake spirituality.
It's like the word mindfulness has kind of become like the word spirituality in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody means something different.
Well, before I let you go tonight, Kristen, do you have any particular mindfulness practices or ideas that you think might be worth passing on?
I know it's probably really, really basic, but breathing, honestly helps. Like, it really helps ground me, and it reminds me that I am here in the present moment and what that present moment really looks and feels like. And I try to engage all of my senses in the moment, too. Like, what do I hear? What do I smell? What do I feel if I'm touching something? Yeah, stuff like that.
Awesome. Well, I so appreciate you giving us a call.
Well, thank you for having me. I hope I didn't call too late.
No. Glad to hear from you. But we'll go ahead and wrap up. You have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
She made a great point about the word getting a bit muddled with mindfulness and that maybe some people can use it as an excuse, she said, with the personal accountability part of disengagement, right? Of I'm being mindful, therefore I'm not affected by things.
Sure.
I'm aloof. I'm disengaged. And so, yeah.
I'm not from this earthly realm. I have ascended.
Yeah. When it's like, no, you're supposed to be affected. Like, that's how this works, you know, is we're in an environment and then it hits us in a certain way. So if someone sees mindfulness as like, oh, that's just, I don't have to care about your experience. And I'll feel whatever I want to feel and you can't get to me. It's like that's not really being mindful. That's avoidance, you know? So it's remembering like we are still engaged with things and we're interacting with it. We're just aware of not putting extra stories or resistance or any of that. So yeah, some people can maybe consider themselves a little enlightened because they're just like, well, I don't let anything get to me. It's like, oh, okay. So you're impenetrable. Cool. How's that working? Like, you're missing out on a lot of important things then if you're just so able to cut it off and then claim it as this evolved state of being.
Well, without wanting to like trick ourselves into some sort of fake journey, do you have any advice or resource for where people might want to get started?
Yeah, well, I think you can Google mindfulness, get a shit ton of stuff, right?
Oh, no question. Yeah, right? So many things.
Yes, yeah. One thing, this is kind of a answer, non-answer. It can be easy to dismiss some of the basic stuff, breathing, checking in with our senses. Like there's a lot of stuff that, I don't know about you, when I'm like clicking on things and research, I'm like, yeah, I've read that one. Give me something more. And it's like, wait. Why are you needing something profound? Why can't we just sit with the thing that is basic and give that a little bit of time, right? It's like, we don't want the basic thing because we want transformation. Therefore, we want a solution that feels magical. And it's like, no. If you see something showing up a lot as a basic practice, do that, you know, or don't be like, well, I know all of that already. So give me the advanced student stuff. It's like, no, the basic stuff is still good. That's the foundation, you know? So the breathing and, just paying attention, physical sensations, all of that. Book wise, I just really like, Chris Germer wrote it, and hopefully we'll include all the stuff in the show notes.
Mindful Path.
Yes, that's still one.
Chris Germer, absolutely.
Because it is mindfulness and self-compassion. I mean, and those go together, you know, so well, but that's still my favorite because it just lays it out and makes so much sense of it. And they're like practical things to do as well. Tara Brach, Radical Acceptance, like it's still the same book I'll always recommend for just confronting those like darker places, you know, within ourselves. And just as a like an app for people that if they're really like, I don't know anything about this, like I need some help, like Insight Timer is such a good free app that has guided meditations. It has but people talking about this stuff, right? Like resources to kind of be educated on it. And it also just has a literal timer if you want to have like a formal meditation practice. So I think that's a nice tool to have as well to just incorporate it as like a daily. And then also in terms of relationship, there's these card decks. I forget what company makes it, but they're called the And deck. And maybe
people have seen it more.
Some of my clients
really are great.
Yeah. So I think there's multiple decks for like couples or long-term or
wherever
healing.
You're at in a relationship.
Yeah.
In case I stepped on it, that was the And. A-N-D.
Yeah. It's just the word the And. It's two separate words, but it's a great way to have conversations with a partner or a friend, just working on intimacy in general. Like if it's hard to confront certain things or know how to open up, like you've got that, these really, really cool to get comfortable and close with someone and like safely approach subjects that you feel a little awkward bringing up on.
Sure. Well, I love all of those are totally co-signed recommendations. I might also throw in there Good Morning, I Love You by Shauna Shapiro as a good mindful book to explore. But I today, I want to really highlight the first thing that you said, which is that it might be great to read a book. It might be great to do a daily meditation and all of these things, but sometimes you got to keep it simple, stupid. Like a friend of mine shared with me this quote recently. If given the choice between journey and a destination, the ego will always choose a journey. Like you were saying earlier, we so often look to overcomplicate things instead of just doing the basics, instead of just doing what makes sense and having that beginner's mind around our breath, around presence, some of these ideas.
Yeah, it is the basic stuff. It's like, I don't know how many times I keep trying to find a supplement that will allow me to never eat a vegetable ever again. It's like, I don't know. I think you just eat the vegetable.
I think maybe just eat the vegetables.
I think that's what I'm supposed to do. But like, that doesn't seem cool. I don't like that.
Well, great advice. I'm going to check in with you in just a moment about how like leave the audience. But before we do, I want to make sure to share with everybody more about your work and let people know where they can find you online.
Yeah, so I'm just a therapist. So I see adults. Mindful Awesome Therapy is my website. Mm-hmm. And there's my dog. She's deranged. love her. So yeah, I see people with anxiety, perfectionism, like to talk about self-compassion, mindfulness, different places too. So I enjoy the speaking aspect and then just working with individuals who are trying to practice these things and create more space for their authentic selves in their life. Because that's, you know, we come to therapy because we're like, I don't want to be who I am anymore. It's like, oh, it's because you've been trying to not be who you are. That's been your problem, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the work I do during the day is seeing clients.
Awesome. Well, let me take a quick moment to remind people that they can learn about not just this show, but all of the shows put out by Atheist Experience Network by going to tiny.cc/AEN podcast, where there's a collection of all of these shows in a readily digestible audio-only format. You can find all of the books that Callie and I have been talking about, as well as a bunch of other resources, links, and things in the Secular Sexuality Facebook fan group, which is definitely a good time and worth checking out at tiny.cc/FBSSG. The Atheist Community of Discord at tiny.cc/ACD Discord is another place to continue this conversation. And I definitely want to encourage people to check out our new merch store. I've mentioned this for a couple of weeks now, but we really have made some really interesting and great improvements. It's a really quality product, something I would very much encourage you to take a look at. But of course, the most important part of our night is taking a moment to thank all of the other folks helped to make all of possible and to show you our sexy, sexy crew cam. Thank you all so much for everything that you've done to help us look so good tonight, Crew Cat and everyone else. And then finally, Kelly, I guess all of these very, very simple but big ideas. Are there any final thoughts, impressions that you'd like to leave with the audience?
I feel like it just, the root of it is a willingness to see yourself clearly. Mm. Like that's, because if there's like, okay, I'm going to apply all these skills, but like that better fix me, right? But I don't want to actually see what's there. It's like, oof, you're going to have a hard time because you're just going to keep avoiding it with new great self-help skills. So that's, I think the big thing is realizing like you're going to find good stuff when you look at who you are and sit with that, even when things hurt. But if you're actually with the experience of it, there's so much power and healing and soothing and freedom that comes from owning all these different things that we try and hide from ourselves. And so I think just having that like bravery and belief and enthusiasm that like, I'm gonna get some really good stuff when I own up to all these things that I'm scared of is like where it starts from. Cause then you get to do these practices and actually make use of them and go deeper and deeper into stuff versus like, all right, I saw that shitty part of myself. Am I good? Like, okay. It's like, oh no, that's so cool. What does that mean? What's going on there? Like what part of you is hurting? How did that get there? Cause it's not your fault. Like there's so much cool, like passionate, wonderful things that you get to do when you realize that all parts of you are welcome and they want to be seen. They're going to be so happy that they're seen and that you're taking the time to be with them and not have to make them the villain anymore. And how cool it is in your life when you get to have a flaw and it's fine. You don't have to defend it or spend your whole time of like, no, I'm not that type. It's like, oh my gosh, it's so exhausting, right? To try and control other people's perception of us or make sure we come across perfect. It's like, it feels so good to be like, oof, yeah, no, I did react in that way. Like
that's a real thing. It's a bummer, but it's real.
Yeah, that is just, it's so relieving. You have so much less work to do when you look at and accept these parts of yourself. You're working so much harder when you're trying to run from everything.
Yeah, stop resisting your pain. It'll hurt. No, I appreciate everything so much. I appreciate you being here and everything that you shared with us. And I guess I just want to encourage everybody to like really be willing to slow down, to check in with their bodies, really like connect with themselves, and to acknowledge, you know, if it's too hot, cold, too uncomfortable, check in and notice what's happening in your left foot right, what's going on in your right pinky right. Once you have cultivated that like quiet, still connection with self, probably be a good time to maybe give yourself a big old orgasm, or better yet, give somebody else one.
Watch Talk Heathen live Sundays p.m. Visit tiny.cc/call show 51999. Connect to show online tiny.cc call.